know that caricature of teenagers you see on TV? The one where the teen talks back and is bratty and rebellious and goes to public school and slams the locker door. Yeah, I know you know those kids. I was pretty convinced I'd never have one of those because, hey, I chose to homeschool and we were going to be close and bonded. I'd always know what was going on in the minds of my kids and they'd always want to tell me. Yeah, that isn't quite how it went. I mean, I had great teenagers and we talked a lot, but they shocked the living daylights out of me on a regular basis. Their thought patterns, their ideas, their desires, even something as simple as arguing over which radio station we would play in the car took me by surprise. Today's conversation with Maya St. John is all about that journey. Why do our kids stop wanting to be a part of the read aloud time? Why do our kids turn down a chance to hang out with their grandparents? Why do they become these people we don't understand? And why do they voice their opinions suddenly with so much strength after they used to be such go-along-to-get-along kind of kids? Let's delve into this aspect of high school life, the transition from being young, pleasant children to teens trying to figure out how to be individuals in a homeschool household. Join me, will you? Welcome to the Brave Writer Podcast. With me on today's episode is Maya St. John, homeschooling mother of three children who range in age from 14 down to 9, but also with a brand new baby due this summer. Maya, her husband Josh, and their family live in a 1900-style farmhouse in Roanoke, Indiana, on a farm which includes 2 ponies, 15 chickens, 4 ducks, 2 cats, a bunny, a dog, and a huge garden. So you can imagine that Maya's got a very active life. Before she was a mom, Maya was an elementary school teacher, and she never imagined that she'd become a homeschooler until her oldest went off to kindergarten and Maya realized she wanted to be with her daughter during the best waking hours. Today, Maya homeschools, enjoys reading, walking, gardening, yoga, massages, and plenty of time doing what she describes as time with life-giving friends. Additionally, Maya's family is a band, the St. John Family Band, and they recently launched their first single on Spotify. When Maya wrote to us in our Ask Julie season, she was seeking some advice. So let's welcome Maya to the podcast and find out what she would like to have me answer. Welcome, Maya.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
So great to have you. What an active life you have.
I know, it's crazy. I'm actually kind of teared up because hearing someone describe my life was like, whoa, that is beautiful. It is big. It's awesome. It's just a gift that I've been given.
Absolutely. It's already full, isn't it?
It is, and there's another one coming.
My goodness, what a lucky child that will be to enter into such a full, beautiful life that you actually value. That is fabulous. I love that that's how this podcast has begun.
Yeah. Yes, it is. It's so good to be here, and I am, you know, several years into this journey and just thinking about how I never, ever imagined myself here, but here I am. And it feels, you know, some days I feel like we really are in a good spot. I mean, we really, really are several years into this. We're good, but it feels as if we're going into a new season. And so that is what I wrote to you about. My 14-year-old heading into high school. So we have a kind of a two-part question that I shared with you. And then so going into high school and then introducing a new baby, like August 24th, like the first day of school, the first day of high school, we're going to have a baby.
Incredible back to school idea. Have a new baby and expect things to go well.
Right. And so just wanting to brainstorm with you what this new season will look like for us.
Totally got it. And I really love that you're reaching out you have this interesting span of ages. You have this little baby, but then the next youngest child is already on the verge of a change too, right? Like 9 becoming 10 feels very different than toddlers or 6-year-olds, doesn't it?
Right. You know, I never ever would have said that, hey, when our baby is 9, let's have another baby. But you know what? It's just being in this season of where I am, you know, 14, 12, 9, and I'm 39. Just wow. 39. So I won't be 40 yet when I have the baby. But just never pictured this, but it's such a sweet time to have a baby.
Yes.
You know, it's almost like, hey, I want to recommend this to friends. Like, I, you know what? I'm going to be able to go to the store and like say, hey, I'll be back in 30 minutes, you know, and not have to wrangle toddlers in the store. And then just the wisdom and the perspective that I have of what mothering looks like is completely different than when I was 24, when I had my first child. So I'm looking forward to that part of this new season.
I love hearing that. I think that's got to be speaking to many women out there listening to this podcast as they are contemplating their later in life babies. I've heard many times from women who've had babies over 38 years old that there is a kind of appreciation for what a baby means that you couldn't possibly grasp when you were in your 20s. And so I love that you are putting that out there and validating what a rich opportunity it is to mother at this stage in your life. And just that alone, I just want to pause right there and recognize that that's true across the board in your homeschool, with your children at the ages they are. You get to use the wisdom that you've gained in these 39 years. You don't have to start from scratch. So as you're looking at this teenager going into high school where, you know, so often we feel as though we're choosing to homeschool again. I call it the re-upping moment. You know, you can kind of figure it out when they're in kindergarten and first grade. You can imagine being their instructor and having a lifestyle of learning and using gardening to teach math, right? Like you have a vision that feels sort of a natural learning lifestyle combined with some programmatic stuff, but it's within your own imagination. For some reason, when we hit that wall for high school, the it all counts now moment, we have to re-up, we have to reimagine how our lives will look to support this education that is now going to be scrutinized by college admissions, or if your child decides to go to, you know, part-time enrollment at a junior high or a high school. Are you feeling some of that pressure?
I'm not feeling that pressure at all. In fact, I'm surprised at the peace and excitement that I feel about the high school journey. It's almost as if this foundation, this beautiful, as you described it, really an organic, rich, early homeschooling experience we had in their early years, how so much of that now has paid off. And I look at our 14-year-old beautiful Sophie and I know she's ready, you know, she's ready for these high school years. However, there are check boxes to be checked. There are boxes to be filled. There are SATs and ACTs to prepare for and colleges to try to get into.
Yep.
And so I'm excited and I feel excited because it almost feels a little organized to me. Like, okay, this is a very organized system. These are the boxes we need to fill. My fear is that I'm not ready. I still love the family style homeschooling. And she wants to be independent, completely independent, but she's still not ready for that. I don't want her to be completely independent yet. So that balance of continuing to stay involved, but also letting go. Continuing.
Yeah.
I still want her to depend on me, but I know that she should be independent and she is naturally. That's just what's happening. So it's me letting go. But I also just want to make sure that her heart, which is the first priority, is still being nurtured and her soul still being cultivated. And that's what I feel like I'm a little bit fearing.
Give me more about that. What do you fear might happen and how might it happen?
With her heart and her...
Yeah, let's start there. Let's start with the part where you just brought up a fear. So you're not feeling as nervous about the academics. So let's go to the place where you're feeling nervous. You want to protect her heart and her soul. Can you describe a little bit about what could go wrong that you are afraid of?
I just think time. Time is, you know, she's 14, so she would rather, you know, sit in her room and listen to music and organize her closet. And so me honoring that and knowing where she is developmentally, wanting to pull her down with us during our morning time, or she sometimes doesn't see the relevance in that. Like, this is wasting my time. I need to be up getting my math done. That I can't be sitting here and listening to the theology book isn't a good use of my time. So making sure that I am still can hone her in on times when she feels that it's just not a good use of her time.
How does that feel when she tells you something that you value doesn't feel like a good use of her time? How does that feel for you as her mom?
Well, I think that would fill me with a little bit of fear that I'm not ready for you to completely fly yet.
And so keep going with that. I'm not done with you yet. Let's stay right there. So what does that mean? What would happen if she did fly? She didn't come down. She had more autonomy. What are you actually afraid of? What's the outcome of that?
Well, I think I'm afraid of the most important things are not the check boxes on her high school transcript. They are very important to get into college and they're very important for her intellectual development, but they're not the most important things about her as a child and as a person and as us as a family.
Right.
And so when we're little, so let's just say elementary, even through middle school, you're all just kind of on the same page. And then all of a sudden things get really real. And now you're working for the world, you know, you're working for the man and you're working for this high school transcript. That's where my fear comes in. And I just want her to value. And I think that she does.
To value what? What do you want her to value?
To value what our whole family as a whole views as the top priority.
And what is that?
So that would be our study of the scripture, our study of theology, if it's even beautiful things that aren't necessarily on her high school transcript. Even her grandmother came over the other day and she wanted to watercolor with the kids. And I said, go outside and paint with your grandma and forget about the math lesson. And so valuing the moment, maybe.
Did she want to do that?
She would have preferred, I think, to get her math done.
Yes.
Because she knew that that would be hanging over her for the rest of the day.
Okay. So here, let me see if I can summarize a little bit. That was beautiful, by the way. Thank you for sharing and disclosing so much. So on the one hand, you know that she has these obligations if she wants to prepare for adulthood. And we know what those are, the academic path to college. And you're willing for her to hit those check boxes, and she sounds pretty self-motivated, which is a dream for many parents, that she is willing to put in the work to get that done. At the same time, you're experiencing this massive transition away from her being well integrated into the family dynamic, and she seems to be individuating. She's starting to pull away. So one of the things you mentioned is you're doing a read aloud time, and she thought to herself, I'm less interested in hearing about theology and more interested in organizing my bedroom or doing my math. It sounds like your religious faith is a high priority in your family. So what happens in that moment is your child is rendering an opinion, maybe an opinion that you've never experienced before, because she's testing it out. She's finding out, can I say no to something my mom values and still be loved by my mom just as much? That's the meta message underneath of it. She's not necessarily conscious of this, but that's a little bit what happens. It happens in every family in some way. You know, you have a family that's all about a certain kind of music. Let's say it's, you know, James Taylor and all these sort of folksy singers. And then you have a child who's like, but I really like Metallica, right? Like there's this question, can I be different than you and still fit into this family? Do you see that emerging in her life in any other areas?
No. And, you know, I don't. That's so interesting. I'm just pondering what you're saying, because I think she definitely feels like she's entering into a different season than the 12-year-old and the 9-year-old.
Yes. Maybe aware that one of the ways to be different than them is to not be with them. I know with my oldest kids, Noah and Johanna, when they hit the teen years, they never wanted their friends to come over to our house because we had 3 small children and they felt like it was putting their friends around the babies. You know, some of these babies were just 2 years younger than them, but there was a feeling of, because we're a homeschool and everybody's around each other all the time, it was hard for them to differentiate themselves from this mass of children to be true teenagers. When you all live in the same 4 walls for your whole life and you've been doing homeschool in the same way as your first grader when you're a 7th grader, it takes some imagination and creativity to help that teenager feel like they are preparing now for adulthood. And I'm going to just give you a little phrase to contemplate. The point of being a teen is to prove to yourself that you will make it as an adult without your parents. You spend between the ages of 13 and 18 figuring out ways to prove to yourself, not to your parents, not to your peer group, but to yourself, that if I'm no longer with these people who care for me, I will make it. I can survive in college. I can get a job and go to work. I can pay for my bills. Now, it starts showing itself at 13 and 14 with just tiny new preferences that have nothing to do with the family. I remember my daughter Johanna dyeing her hair. She had beautiful red hair. She dyed the tips purple. She was looking for ways, you know, she wore black clothes. This is back when the gothic look was kind of popular. And so we could latch on to these sort of what looks superficial as changes and think, oh, that's just her being a teen. But it's also a bid for expression that separates them from this cozy schoolhouse experience of home. And here's the reason that that is an important thing to remember when we're talking about teenagers. I share a lot that there are 4 principles of what makes education feel magical or enchanted or natural, you know, brain-based. The first 2 are surprise and mystery, and those work really well with young kids. But for high schoolers, what they are really looking for is risk and adventure. And so you are right on the threshold of that right now. And so risk and adventure show up in many ways. One of them is risking telling you what they really think and feel that contradicts the family value set. It's thinking differently than people around you. It's risking expressing that or reading things that you haven't been allowed to read or didn't know to read earlier. But then it's also adventure. It's getting outside the 4 comfortable walls and proving yourself, testing yourself out from under parental supervision. So maybe before we move forward a little bit further, help me understand the risks and the adventures that your daughter is either taking or wants to take right now. Are there any that you're aware of?
No, you know, she is not doing anything, you know, like dyeing the tips of her hair, or she's a major rule follower. However, I can see that the first part of that, the point of being a teen,
yes,
is to, you know, try to survive without your parents. I can absolutely see all of that going on right now. The whole risk and adventure thing, yes. I mean, this is what she is doing right now. And I love it. I absolutely love it. I just feel like I'm clinging a little bit.
Yes. It's not uncommon, especially if you're a very bonded parent, which is what it sounds like you are. Yes. And there is a loss for you that needs to be grieved. You know, you're losing the full family sitting on the living room floor while you read aloud feeling, which is so satisfying because homeschooling is your adventure. You know, it's not our children's adventure. They didn't pick homeschooling. It was chosen for them. They wake up every day in the same house that they've always been in, or, you know, or a house that is their family's home. They don't get on a bus. They don't, you know, perform for other students, coaches, or teachers. And so what happens for them is they have to seek ways within that context to create for themselves an adventure. So your daughter's saying, I would rather do math than paint. There's a part of me that really thought that was beautiful, and I'll tell you why. She's probably done a lot of really cool painting and artwork and stuff in your family. Given who your family is, that has been her usual experience. And what she's saying is, I see the future coming and I want to prove to myself that I can meet it. I can be disciplined and not just do fun things. Like, isn't that an interesting interpretation maybe of what was going through her?
It's very interesting. And it's another point that just makes me tear a bit because it's true. And her grandma that was here, what it has been so involved in her life. And this grandma has always painted and done the nature hikes and filled the bird feeders with them. And she's here wanting to watercolor again, but she's not going to be here forever. And so when I asked Sophie, please just go watercolor with your grandma, the math can wait. But you're right. It's exactly what she wanted. She knew that she had some adult responsibilities. She still has about 20 math lessons, which is ridiculous why we make them complete their textbook.
Right?
She has about 20 math lessons left over from last year and our last just the school year that she's trying to knock out. And that's what she was trying to do. So it's true. It's true what you said. And,
it's sometimes hard for us because you're standing in this sort of fulcrum of this, you know, scale. You're able to see into the future that your mother will not always be here or that the grandmother will not always be here. And you're able to see the vanishing of this little young daughter, your first child, who you were so intimately connected to. And now you cannot see around all the corners of her mind anymore. You can't read her mind. You can't know her thoughts. You can't know how she is processing what you're sharing with her. You want her to have the same ability to have perspective like you do. She doesn't have it yet. She won't have it. Her grandmother is not as important to her as your mother is to you. I'm assuming it's your mother. Is it your mother?
It's actually my mother-in-law that I'm...
Your mother-in-law. So the grandmother, that piece, that feeling of time slipping through your fingers and she won't always be here is less present to someone who's 14 or 21, honestly, and it is how it should be. She has a reservoir of amazing experiences with this grandmother that she will never lose, that she will treasure for the rest of her life. And right smack dab in the middle of that is also a choice to not do it right now. And that choice is equally important in her development.
Yeah.
It's a little hard, you know, crossing over the threshold. So when you said before that you can see the risk and adventure piece coming, even though, you know, she's still pretty much living at home and is a cooperative, obedient kind of daughter, I'm not suggesting to you that her temperament will suddenly flare and she'll be what you might call rebellious. But even kids who adopt their parents' values adopt them and interpret them in new ways. One of the things we know from research, for instance, is that kids who are raised in certain religious traditions will pick within Christianity a new denomination, within Judaism a slightly different, you know, conservative instead of orthodox, or you know what I'm saying? Like they will choose an expression, even if they stay within the community that they were raised in, because the only way to know if something is your own is if it's your own. So they're going through this period of making choices for themselves. I've shared before that my daughter became a vegan in high school because she was studying these PETA videos and talking about it at school. And that, even though today, as a full-grown adult at 28, she's no longer vegan, during her high school years, that was her testing her own commitment ability to an ideal. And it mattered. It was worth supporting on the grounds of that alone, because this is how we teach ourselves to live according to our values, is to have the chance to have values, even values that your family doesn't have.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about what you see coming when the baby's here. Does that involve any anxiety around losing touch with your daughter more because you'll have to focus on this baby?
Yeah, it does. I still will lay, we'll go upstairs and I'll put the kids to bed still at this age and, you know, say their prayers and read aloud. It's really to the little boy. And then a lot of times, so Ian is 9 and then Hallie will climb into bed and join us, who's 12. And then Sophie will occasionally join us. But I'll tuck people in and then I try to lay with Sophie a lot at night. But through my pregnancy, I get tired earlier at night. And so I have not been going up and laying with her. And just the other day, I thought to myself, I need to be doing this. I need to be going up and lying down with her because I know that it's going to get a lot harder when the baby comes. I mean, when am I going to just lie with her and talk to her and listen to her? So yeah, I definitely think of that at that time of day. During the daytime hours, the Ian and Hallie, the middle two, are best friends. They pal around, they play together all the time. And Sophie, so here's kind of another thing I was thinking of as you were talking. She's kind of out on her own in a way. Mm. Mm. And because she is just in a different stage of development, so she doesn't really, I mean, she will run around and play, especially when we have friends over, she'll join in with the whole group. But when it's just the three of them, typically it would be Ian and Hallie running around playing nonstop, and Sophie's kind of with me doing the adult thing or off on her own. So I see her, and what I think she really sees herself too, I predict that she really attaches to this baby. Maybe it would drive us further apart, or maybe it will, you know, make us spend more time together because she's going to want to be with that baby.
Absolutely. And you can stay alert to whatever those possibilities are. One of the things that you might do between now then and August is spend a little time talking this over with her. Find out what kinds of adventures she might be imagining, or even create some opportunities for her that you haven't considered. One of the things that we know about kids her age is they don't only want to check off the boxes. They don't only want adventures like, you know, rock climbing at the River Gorge. They're looking also for intellectual adventure, academic risk. There is a part of them that is hungry to discover how they stack up and how well they can master a certain subject area. So you might look at ways for her to expand the boundaries of the home so that she isn't only learning alone. One of the, you know, myths of home educators is that we're all looking for these independent learners, and she's already pretty good at independent schoolwork. What we're looking for, though, isn't necessarily independent learning, but an opportunity for collaborative learning so that their ideas are bumping up against their peers, other instructors, to give them a sense of what it means to be in their peer group community. It doesn't mean that they have to go to school. We can certainly homeschool through high school, but are there co-ops? Is there an acting organization? You know, my two older kids were in a Shakespeare company for high school students. Is she meaningfully involved? She's only 14, but you know, when she hits 16, can she have a job outside the home? What are ways that she can sort of test drive her own personality and her intellect outside of the family? Because here's what happens. When you allow your kids to have a little bit more bandwidth in their intellectual curiosity, what they're hearing at home can actually become more valuable to them. If all they're hearing is one version of events, of thoughts, of politics, of whatever it is, your values, they sometimes then become sort of antagonistic about that because they're trying to individuate and they don't have any other information to bump up against it. Does that make sense?
Yes. And she is involved actually this summer, something that she's been wanting to do for a few years, and we finally said yes, is an incredible theater group.
And I love it.
And she is right now involved in the summer camp. and they're doing Joseph in the amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, and they do classical plays.
Nice.
So she got the number one part that she wanted. She got a, I guess people told us that it was a good part for a first timer, you know, auditioning. So she was super pumped about that. And she has just absolutely loved it. And it's in those situations where we truly see her thrive, really. She's happy at home. She's just a happy girl.
Yes.
But she is just thriving. And the director has messaged me a few times and just said how much they love her, love in all caps, and how, what a great job she's doing. My husband says, are they telling every parent that? this mom moment. And then he's the man moment. Like, I, babe, I bet they're telling every parent this. Like, I hope they are. I hope they're telling every parent how much they love their children and how awesome they're doing.
Absolutely. Well, no, so that's a perfect example. So here's something that you might want to do then is spend, you know, go out alone with her this summer before you have the baby, let your kids, the other two kids stay home with their dad, you know, go do an afternoon. I don't know, see a movie, do your nails, whatever, get out with your daughter and then just fantasize about the next 2 years. Make sure that she is looking forward to things. One of the dangers sometimes when you bring a new baby in is that your gaze turns back inward to the home, but she's at a stage of life where her gaze is beyond the home. So even though she'll enjoy being around the baby, we certainly don't want her to turn into a little mother before she's barely been a teenager. We want her to have opportunities. And you might even shift the mode around read aloud time. So you might say, you know, we're going to read aloud in the mornings. Here are the things that I'm planning to read. Are any of these interesting to you? Do you want me to include you? Like, do it that way. Instead of waiting for her to tell you, I don't want to be there, show her what you have. Say, you know, I know that you have other things you like to work on. I just want to know, do you want to be a part of this book or this time? Or shall we call you down when we hit this, when we're going to do a poetry tea time? Like that, so that she starts feeling more like she has some choice to say yes, as opposed to having to say no to get what she needs. Does that make sense?
That does. That makes a lot of sense, because I would just make it required that she would join us. And that's right. That's probably not a good idea.
Well, it works fine when they're young. The more that we go into the mode where we're afraid that they might be having thoughts we don't want them to have, and so we're going to control what they're exposed to, the more they create thoughts we don't want them to have. Because that's how they individuate. That's how they have this risk and adventure. But if you make it safe for them to have adventure and risk with, you know, within the context of your loving relationship, you'll be surprised at the times that they choose to be with you, to participate. But it has to be a choice. And it has to be given to them. It's not something that they should just know by osmosis. And you know, I love, we have this saying in Brave Writer, which is my writing company. We have this saying, if you have a reluctant, you know, teenage angsty girl who doesn't want to write, I say things like, well, then just tell them they're only allowed to write by candlelight at midnight. You know, change the conditions, make things more appealing. You know, if you've always laid on her bed at night to hear her share and unburden her heart, maybe that is no longer the mode. Maybe she needs to get out of the house with you and you go thrift store shopping, and that's where the conversations happen. Start to think about what creates a sense of novelty for her, because that's part of what's going to signify to her that she's more of a grown-up.
Yes. Yes. That's so good. Yesterday I had to go to Costco and get my tires rotated. Fun. So I left the other two at home and I took her with me, and just because I wanted to. And she wanted to go. She wanted to go, and she wanted me to take her to Target and get some sunglasses, because
nice.
She went to Indiana Beach today with a group of friends. And so, I mean, she always wants to go with me. She wants to.
That's perfect.
She wants to be with me.
That's perfect.
So I just said, yes, let's go. And we went and we got sunglasses, and it was successful. And
And draw, you're doing exactly the right things. And now you can even expand it. So one of the great joys for me of teenage years with my kids was allowing them to introduce me to movies and television shows and music that I would never have thought to pick. I literally had a daughter who loved horror movies and I hate horror. And I had to learn to watch with her. I didn't watch them all, but I watched several because I wanted access to her. And there was something about her being willing to share that side of herself with me that I found a vocabulary that we didn't have before. But she's also the same kid who, just like your daughter, would want to hop in the car, go to Target, and we would play alphabet games in the car, you know, trying to name an adjective for every letter of the alphabet, trying to name a band for every letter of the alphabet. So there's a girlishness embedded in this teenager. It's not just that they are trying to be adults. They want the connection to their moms, but they also have a world they're hoping to explore. And we have a choice. We can either come with them on that journey, or we can try and lock it down and prevent them from finding it. And what I discovered the hard way is that going on the journey with them is far superior than trying to control them away from it. That's where connection comes, is when you can build that trust between the two of you.
So, Julie, I'm thinking, you mentioned that this homeschooling thing is really our adventure. And
yes,
that is true. So what I'm thinking as you're sharing and teaching is that at some point, what I'm doing, I think what my fear is that I see her wanting, not that she doesn't want to be on our adventure, because I think she truly does, but she also is creating her own adventure.
That's right.
And if I continue to dig my feet in the ground and say, no, you will stay on my adventure, and she's digging her feet in the ground and saying, I've got my own adventure, then there's this, just this resentment is going to grow for me from her.
Yep.
So that's not a place where I can stay.
No. And it'll be counterproductive. There is a letting go that comes with the teen years. And I will be honest with you, I was unprepared for it. I was a home birthing, La Leche League leading, you know, breastfeeding, co-sleeping mother. I was one of those ridiculous attachment parents, which we also call exhaustion parenting in my family. But I believed in it wholeheartedly and I felt very close to my children. And it took me by surprise that when Noah hit his teen years, this brain had thoughts I didn't know about. And some of the thoughts scared me. And what I found myself doing is trying to control his brain through external requirements. And of course, fortunately for me, Noah was very faithful to his organic self. And I had to learn that if we were going to be close, it was time for me to let go and to join him. It's the opposite of what we did when they were little, where they are joining us. Now we are starting to join them. And it happens gradually. I'm not saying, you know, you just jump off the high dive on their 13th birthday. But you are going to be getting to know this emerging child, so this emerging adult. So when your daughter is excited to go with you to rotate tires and then shop for sunglasses, and you know that's all about the fashion statement, the fact that she'll be with her friends and outdoors, that's the right decision, right? Not being afraid she's going to buy fashion sunglasses and wear a bikini. Those, it's all about being with her as she's testing new versions of herself and being willing to have conversations, to be uncomfortable. You know, we were willing to be uncomfortable when we breastfed in the middle of the night, waking up, not getting enough sleep, you know, smashing the boob, you know, how all that goes, right? This is another kind of discomfort. It is the discomfort of accommodating a developing mind. And one of the things I like to remind parents is everything you believed at 15 went through an overhaul by 25, and then again by 30, and then again by 40. So don't worry too much about what they believe at 15, because sure enough, it's going to go through a revision in the next year, two, three, 4 years. I mean, I rarely meet someone who says, everything I thought I knew at 15 is what I still know, and I'm 35. Just, you know?
Yeah.
So we can take a little bit of a dispassionate perspective. Be more curious about the workings of the mind and these little flashes where your daughter shows up in strength and says, I don't want a watercolor. That would be a moment to be sort of like, ooh, look at her. She's being a grown-up suddenly. She's like done with little children things. She's being responsible. You know, you might even wink at her and say, oh, let me bring you a cookie. That's pretty cool. You know, like see it in a different way. Or say, well, as soon as you get math done, come on down and let's take a look at what the younger two painted. I'd love to hear what you think about the younger two. Bring her in as a co-conspirator as an adult in the family.
Yes. Yes, that is so good. It's so, so good and so true. I can just see it. I can see that, you know, one example that keeps coming to my mind is as I'm trying to sketch out her schedule for next year, I sat down with her and I said, Sophie, I have a lot of really great ideas, but this is your journey.
Love it.
I am going to tell you what my ideas are. And you can choose. And so we were talking about Latin. She had done a Latin class last year, which she did really well in. She got an A in the class and she got a good score on her national Latin exam. And I was trying to minimize my running for this new school year because of the baby. And so I, at the homeschool convention, bought her a new Latin curriculum that I thought she could just do at home. Well, when I sat down with her and gave her her options, she said, I really want to do that class again. Mm. I like that class. She likes the accountability of getting her Latin done and getting out and knowing of the deadlines. And she, of course, loves the collaboration with her friends and peers. And although it's going to cost me 5 times as much money, and then it's going to be a lot more running. That was the decision that she had made on her own.
And you supported that?
I did. Okay.
Good job. Good job, Mom. And one of the things you can do, I'm going to share with you an exact experience I had just like this. My daughter, Johanna, was in a co-op. We had a 100 family co-op and I was a part of it for 10 years. And I taught the writing program in that co-op for the last 4 or 5 of those years. I taught acting for the first part. And so anyway, at a certain point, Johanna decided that she wanted to go part-time to our local high school to take French. She wanted to study French in a class. She had taken Latin with a tutor, which I made happen and paid for. And that was even separate from co-op. But anyway, she came to co-op in the mornings. And then at the lunch hour, she was going to need to be driven from the co-op up to the local public school to take this French class. But I couldn't take her because I was scheduled to teach writing after lunch. So I basically was telling her, I don't think this is going to work out. Well, interestingly, I finally decided that she was a bigger priority to me than the families in this co-op, and I should just bow out of teaching writing. So I went to the co-op leadership and I said, I can't teach the writing class. My daughter needs this French class. It's really important to her. Here's what the leadership said to me. They're like, we can't lose you for teaching writing. We'll drive her to her French class. So one of the leaders drove her every week, took her during the lunch hour, up to the high school so she could be at French. And then when co-op was over, I would pick her up. What I want to point out is that sometimes we have a failure of imagination around our own circumstances because as homeschoolers, we are used to being so self-reliant and we are almost like little entrepreneurs. We're just everything kitchen table. And we forget that you can pay someone, you can ask for a favor, you can reciprocate. There are ways to help our kids get what they need that don't only rely on our ingenuity and resources. And so I love that you've made this commitment. The next step might be involving your daughter or this community and finding out if they can help you out with some of this driving.
It's funny. That's just awesome because so the summer theater camp that she's in meets during the school year, meets on Fridays. And that is when we are involved in a homeschool co-op. And there is no way I can get her to this group. It's not possible.
Right.
And I was speaking with the director who's been emailing me and telling me how great Sophie's doing. And I was telling her that. I said, there's no way I can get her there. And the director says, I'll take her. And I will bring her home. And it's hard because I thought, I can't accept that because I'm not doing anything to help the director. It's not a carpool. I'm not doing any part of this driving. I shouldn't sign my kids up for something if I can't do all the work, right?
Wow. Wow.
And that's how I was making myself feel, is that I, in order for me to sign my kids up for something, I had to be the one that could do it, or else we were just overscheduled and that was just bad, you know? I accepted the gift of the offer and I said yes.
Well done. Well done. We are a community. We don't raise our children alone. It's okay to receive help from someone and you will give back, but it may not be to that person. It will be to someone else. This is what it means to be a community of home educators, and people who care about education are going to be a part of that journey with you. And I love that you've already experienced it. It's ironic that I shared that example and you actually had the identical story already in your life. So I hope that this is an encouragement to people who are listening to us having this conversation to not assume that if you can't be the one to provide everything to your children, then you have to turn down their desires. We actually want to show our children the interdependence of our human family. That we are supposed to be generous, supportive, helpful. We can receive help and we can give it. Both of those are true. And sometimes receiving is harder than giving.
Absolutely, it is. For me.
Yes. Absolutely. Well, so here's what I'd like to just then summarize what we've talked about, Maya. What a wonderful question you asked. I know so many parents are going to have that same issue about their teenagers. And then there are even others who are dealing with these younger kids and a new baby. So that was ideal. The bottom line for me when I think about this coming year for you is to notice, maybe even make notes in a notebook, those moments when your daughter shows up as not being like you. Shows up as her own person, makes a choice, a decision, expresses an opinion or a need, and celebrate that. Even if the celebration is just a little inward high five to yourself. Oh, look at Sophie. Look at her go. Look at Sophie go. She's testing. She's figuring something out. She's asserting something. It's making me uncomfortable, but look at her go. Let's value the development of this mind, this interior, these thoughts and ideas and feelings that she isn't always disclosing to you. Because ultimately, when she gets to that point where she is a full-grown adult, she's the one who needs to be a master of all those things. We don't want her only looking to her parents to tell her whether or not she's on the right track. And then the second piece is to issue invitations rather than requirements. So letting her know that she is still welcome, having a wink and a nod, you know, maybe even inviting her at some point, if you're reading one of her favorite books to the kids that she's already heard, asking her if she'll read a chapter while you make the brownies, you know, putting her a little bit more as a collaborator in that sort of adult role, not necessarily being a mother. I'm not asking her to be a second mother to these kids, but putting her more and more in that collaborator role, that feeling that, you know, she is becoming this self-reliant person.
Yes. So good. Thank you so much. This, I'm just going to continue to ponder and think about these things, but you've really hit it. It's neat to hear it from your perspective because although I can say, wow, this is so true, I have never thought of it this way before.
Wow. Wow. Well, then that's wonderful. And I'll be excited to see how that impacts the feelings you have. Because I think the hardest part for us when we're working with teens is that we have disquiet going inside. We have memories of being teens and we have things we did when we were teens we hope our kids never ever do. We want to protect them from making the mistakes we made. We hear about teen culture today and it's terrifying. There are so many things that can put us off. But if we can shift the focus to joining them on this journey and letting them show us who they are and what they want, and having us as a resource and a comfort and a collaborator, we shift the ground. It becomes a different journey. So I'm really happy that that's meaningful to you. Do you mind if we call you back in a few months and see how it's going?
That would be wonderful.
Fantastic, Maya. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Isn't this a great topic? I think everybody goes through a rite of passage, moving from being a parent of kids under 12 to a parent of teens. And don't get me wrong, teens are awesome. They can do all kinds of things your younger kids couldn't do, and the conversations you have can be deep, rich, and fascinating. But teens can also be infuriating. This person that you thought you knew suddenly takes a left turn, has thoughts, ideas, desires, and wishes that you never knew about, that you don't understand. Part of what's going on is that the teen is looking for risk and adventure, two of the four forces of enchantment. And as I was discussing with Maya, homeschooling doesn't quite feel like a risk to them. That's your risk. That's the thing you're doing for your adult adventure. And I wrote about that in my book, The Brave Learner. So here's this week's quote from that section on risk. Guess what? Your kids are built the same way as you. They want risks that stimulate them. Just so you know, homeschool is not a risk for them. It's their garden variety life inside four familiar walls with the same parental unit they've always known. They have no urgency about proving anything to anyone, unlike you, who feels you must prove everything to everyone. My book, The Brave Learner, is available for pre-order if you're interested in getting it now, or if we are past February 5th, 2019 when you listen, it's already on sale. Go to thebravelearner.com and click on any of the online booksellers and you'll find it. I'd also like to remind you that coming up on January 22nd, we will be opening registration for the Brave Learner Conference. I'm hosting a conference here in Cincinnati, Ohio on Friday, July 19th, 2019. It will be an extravaganza. We will be meeting at the gorgeous Marriott Renaissance Hotel downtown. We will have treats and pampering and good food and surprises. I've even invited some of my favorite people to come who will be surprise guests. So I hope you'll join us. It is sure to be a time that will be enriching and enlivening for you and your friends. So hope you'll sign up for that. And now let's get back to our conversation with Maya. Hey, Maya, welcome back to the broadcast.
Hello, thank you.
Thanks for coming again. And I'm looking forward to hearing how things are going with your family. Just before we get into the nitty gritty, how's it been since we last talked?
Well, on August 26th, we had our baby.
Oh, yes. What'd you have?
We had a boy.
Congratulations.
And he came on his due date, which is, what is that? I think a 4% chance of happening.
Amazing.
Yes, he came on his due date and we had a beautiful water birth at home. And
love it.
All went well. So the kids were there and it was great. So we have
fantastic. Good job. So how's the transition going, having this baby in the house?
Week one, you know, baby moon, adrenaline. Week two, I got hit with mastitis.
Oh no.
Yes. So week two was tough, but now we're on week three and we're back to rocking it again.
Listen to you here on this podcast recording with a 3-week-old in the house. You are a badass. That's fabulous.
You know, it's my friend called me that the other day and I said, would you just text me that every day?
Good. I hope she obliges. I think that would be a great role for any best friend. That's fantastic.
I know. Yes.
So how's it going with your teen?
Yes. So, you know, we had him August 26th, which is back to school grind, you know, classes are starting, anything outside of, even if we want to take a break at home, outside classes are rocking and rolling and it's busy. So that has been, we're doing it, you know, we're showing up to classes and we're getting the stuff done, but that has been a little bit tough but we're doing a fine job.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
In depth.
Yes, absolutely. Well, how has it gone in terms of just some of the things we talked about, like invitation versus requirement, and helping your teen feel like she's got a collaborator role and is becoming more self-reliant?
That is it's working great. It has, that one idea really challenged me to think of her education in a different way, to let go of that requirement and issue more of the invitation. It works great. It works great for her. So we have been doing that. And on history specifically, one subject that I like to do is the family. We kind of start as a whole group, and then she has a notebook that she branches off on her own. And she kind of doesn't want to do the beginning part with us. And, you know, anything that she kind of uses, I need to get my stuff done. You know, I don't want to waste my time. She doesn't want to do it. So sometimes I kind of encourage her more to do it, just because I know there is value in it. At this point, she says she knows everything that it's going that we cover. And so I just said, you know, I'm sure there will come a time when you don't know what's being covered. And so I will let you know those topics and encourage you more to maybe join us. But yes, that invitation over the requirement has worked great.
I love that. And of course, part of this journey while you have a new baby is going to be her desire to differentiate herself, to not be drawn backward. She'll want to be in the role of a big sister, not of, you know, on the same level as the younger. And so I think it's really awesome that she can even sort of be defiant a little bit, like, no, not doing this, starting on my own. I have my own notebook. I already know this information. We sometimes, you know, with our aged wisdom, right, decades down the road, we're aware of how much more there is to know at all times. And so any teenager who says, I know everything, we sort of chuckle to ourselves. But there's a certain self-confidence building that goes with that declaration. It's a feeling of having traveled, having lived for a few years, having already experienced something. Not everything is brand new anymore. And that boosts confidence for self-discovery and personal responsibility.
But isn't that the challenge? I would say even with older kids, you know, where you are in your life, you just sometimes want to shake them and say, you don't know everything. And that is, I think for me, I call her my guinea pig because she's the oldest.
Right.
That's what kills me is, but you don't. But then there's a surrender that comes in that, I think, is, okay, you think you do, and I know that you don't. But we'll go with this for now.
Because the inevitability of her discovering the limits to her knowledge is there. It's not like she's going to think she knows everything and life isn't going to show her different, right? Like she's literally going to come to the end of her own knowledge over and over again, like we all have. That's why we know more than she does. The interesting thing for me raising teens, especially with my oldest, is how much I thought I knew that I found out I didn't know because I trusted him. So, you know, the classic example I've shared in the past is Noah really didn't want to take chemistry. He didn't want to study chemistry in a tutorial, independently, in a classroom, at a co-op. There was no version of chemistry I could entice him to do. And so I told him if he did not take chemistry, he would not be able to get into the college of his choice. It's a requirement that you have 2 years of lab science, and he would only have had 1 year. He said that was a risk he was willing to take. Sure enough, we applied to University of Cincinnati. We have this list of things on his transcript. It is missing that second year of lab science. And when they found out he wanted to be a linguistics major and had been homeschooled, they said, oh yeah, no problem. We don't care about that. So all of this forecasting of doom, all of this, I know more than you do, ended up not even being true. And so sometimes the lesson in humility goes the other way as well, which is an ironic experience as a parent.
Yes. So that's interesting you share that, because I emailed Beth a question. she asked if I had a question or anything to cover today. And I had shared one example, which our latest battle is over biology, which she is doing a biology course this year at home. We get together with friends and collaborate for labs about once every week, every couple weeks. And she doesn't like it. She says it's too hard. Why does she have to study this? She's never going to study biology in the future. Can I just take an easier one? Basically just to check it off of her list. Playing this just, you know, I'm never going to use this. Why do I need to take it? Type of a thing.
Yes, very interesting.
The only answer I have is we need it for your high school diploma. And another answer that I have, which I'm confident in for her, is I believe that the study of biology is a beautiful thing. I mean, you're studying life. And the purpose of a beautiful education is to expose you to a variety of subjects in which you don't know what you're passionate about. You might think that you do, but you don't. And it's through stumbling upon these different subjects and, you know, studying these different subjects that you discover your gifts and passions. And you don't know what they are until we study them. So I don't know. I'm trying just to come up with more in that department, because it's other subjects too, where I'm never going to use this again. Why do I have to do this?
So one of the things that she said that I think you could take into consideration, however, is how she gets it. So for a child who's really fascinated, let's say, with animals or human biology or, you know, growing an organic garden or something like that, there may be a more attractive way to, you know, that may make biology as a general subject more attractive to the child. I found, for instance, with Liam, he was not so interested in taking the typical biology class that my other kids took at the co-op that included 10 dissections, that was much more of a traditional class. But he was a fanatic about birds. And by the time my fourth child came along, I realized those 10 dissections and taking tests every other week and doing the assignments, they didn't retain it. They got it done, but it wasn't the kind of thing where they were passionate about it, where it stuck with them necessarily. So I was more willing to take a risk with Liam. So what we did is we ordered the Cornell Lab for Ornithology biology course, but it's only about birds. But interestingly, so much more detailed than any of the biology my other kids studied. So we worked through that textbook. We did not complete the textbook, but we did a really good chunk of it, maybe 2/3 of it. We had amazing deep conversations. Around the same time, we found out that the Cincinnati Zoo did zoology classes for high school students and junior high students in the evenings. So I signed him up for those. And in the end, that was how he did biology. And I felt completely fine giving him credit for it, because we accomplished the goal you just mentioned. We were giving him an introduction to this scientific field that helped him have an appreciation for the beauty of biology. And we did it through his interest. So, you know, one of the things you might explore with your daughter is what aspect of this natural world draws her attention. Is it human sexuality? Perhaps because a lot of kids her age are interested in, you know, dating, romance, human relationships, the psychology of relationship. Could she access biology through that door, you know, through social issues, through political agendas, through the way that biology was the most interesting to me when I was her age was through nutrition. My parents were really committed to healthy diet. And so I got fascinated with preservatives, additives, fertilizers, the way nutrition impacted our body's biology. I became a runner. I did speech and debate around those subjects. That was how I became connected. So as a homeschooler, you have the luxury of playing this out in a different way. We tend to, when our kids show resistance to a traditional school subject, and I did this too, is to ask them to hunker down and just do a sort of boring version of it to get through it, when maybe the opportunity we have is to explore it from a different perspective. take it through a different angle.
Which is what she was requesting.
Ah, there you go.
I mean, that's what she was saying was, I need to do a different one.
Yeah.
And can we do something else? And I don't think she was saying, I think when she used the word easy, just because something's easier for you, because it happens to me, your style, doesn't mean that it's bad, you know?
Well, correct. So you have a couple demands that you're juggling. One, you have a brand new baby. So what you really don't want is somebody to throw a hand grenade into the middle of your organized schedule, because right now she's getting all the bases covered and it doesn't cost you as much energy or as much work. And so for her to switch and do something really custom made, that starts to feel like we don't even know if that's going to work. At least I know you're going to get it covered if you stick with this method. So this is what I would call educational triage. You want to sit down with your daughter, hear her perspective, and then admit the limits of your energy and ask her to do the heavy lifting if it means that much to her. So she has two choices. She can either continue with the program that is easy for you to manage given your circumstances right now and just do the best she can, not worry about getting an A, you know, just pass, just do the work because it's easy for the schedule. Or if she would like to do it through a different lens, she needs to take the responsibility to come up with what that lens is, to do some research, to carry that responsibility of finding another way. But she can't expect both things from you right now. And you can always do this incrementally. You can say to her, this is how it needs to be during this season. I either need you to do the heavy lifting or to go along with the plan. We can reevaluate in 2 months and look at it again when I have more time to spare to give you what you need. But right now, I either need you to go with the plan or be more proactive, not relying on me to come up with the solution.
Yep. Yeah, that's
And then that way you're honoring both people and you're giving her a meaningful choice. Because sometimes, one thing I discovered with Johanna, for instance, she was balking at math when she was in eighth grade, every day complaining, I don't want to do math. I want a new program. I don't like what I'm doing. And so finally one day, I said to her, you know what? I'm done teaching you math. You know you need it for high school and I know you need it for college and for your future, but I'm dropping the rope. We're not going to argue about it. And I know if you're not interested now, your interest may be rekindled down the line. So you're free. I'm not going to ask you to do any more math. And she said, wait, what? How am I going to get my math? I said, I don't know. I mean, the book is here. You're welcome to use it, but I'm done. I'm not requiring it anymore. Now, she's that kind of personality that's a really wonderful thing to say to her, because she then actually did feel the impact of that. And she took a couple weeks off, and then she found that she knew she felt better about herself when math was included in her daily tasks. So she returned to it. But now she wasn't complaining to me. She was actually doing the work, asking for help, and keeping her own schedule. Now with Johanna, that was an ideal solution. With Noah, it was me really literally having to just let go. Okay, I guess chemistry is not going to be in your life. And then if you need it to get into college, I guess you'll take it when you're 18.
Yep.
So I just share with you both of those because personalities differ. And if I just tell one version of the story, people will say, well, my child is nothing like that. She didn't, you know, start math just because I took my hands off. Well, she might not. She might not.
Yeah, I think that we've definitely identified a couple subjects in which we need to do a couple of those, think about which strategy we will use.
Yes.
So, yeah, those are good ideas. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. No, it's great. And I'm really happy that the invitation versus requirement has set a different tone. And I think that leaves you now an opportunity for these more advanced conversations about what things will look like. The last thing I offer you, which I mention on another podcast, is what I call the crash course. Johanna never did show interest in U.S. history. And so because we had done so much history during elementary and junior high, I let it go. And then during her senior year, when we knew it was time to add this to her transcript, she had to take an SAT 2 test. to apply to one of the colleges she wanted to go to. We did an 8-week crash course every evening at 7 p.m. with the SAT 2 book. I would read it to her. We would discuss. She would do the pop quiz on that page. And it took us about 6 or 8 weeks. And then she took the test and I gave her full credit. So sometimes that's another option we forget about as home educators. We're so governed by the school system that says it should last 10 months. It should be every day. It should have this many tests. When in fact, for a subject that they are not super attached to, you could do it in what would be the equivalent of a summer school class where they're doing it for 8 weeks and they get credit.
That's a good idea. Yeah, that's good.
Good. You know, I'm glad those help.
I want her education, and I don't know if I just have, if it's too idealistic, but I want what she does to not just be something that she's checking off her list. You know? I mean, isn't that
absolutely
one of the major reasons why we homeschool, is that we're not just checking things off the list, that we're indeed learning and growing learners. And
yes, absolutely. But the way you get there then is that the things that are on their list are things they care about, and it may not look like academics. So that's the dilemma. Most parents think this way. They think, I want my child to love learning. And what they mean by it is, I want my child to love what I'm teaching. But that's not the trade-off. They either love learning and we enter into what they're learning, or we ask them to cooperate with our teaching. It's not always that those two things go together. So what you can do is make a mixture, make a balance where you're feeling like the things you value and that are important to you are part of that mix. But you will want to go all in on some of her interests. I remember Katrin was a huge fan of fashion. So we subscribed to every fashion magazine there was. She continued her brother's cookie business to earn money to buy clothing at the thrift store. She shopped at least once a month with a college friend to buy clothes. We took pictures every day. She worked on her blog every single day. Well, none of this looks like a traditional educational component of a high school education. And yet for Katrin, that was an enormous commitment. It involved writing, reading, design, HTML, you know, so many things that you couldn't necessarily ignore, but they didn't fit neatly into an academic category. Liam was a massive online gamer and he needed hours a day to do that. So part of what I'm suggesting is that you make sure you're going all in on something that really matters to her, taking her opinion into consideration on those more core subject areas, and then talking to her about this aspiration you have that she would fall in love with things like literature and aspect of history, but that you really want her honest evaluation too. And bring all those factors together, put them all on the table, name them.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Is Beth going to type those out?
Beth is my assistant for those who don't know. And yes, she absolutely can do that for you. Yes.
Yay.
You, especially with the baby.
I need a list. Yes.
Well, and we will absolutely let you know when this podcast is going to air so you can listen to it again. But I'm so grateful for your honest share, because I think this is a struggle a lot of parents of teens have.
I think so. Yes. But we're in, you know, and it's a beautiful life. And I just want to make sure that we are honoring her and guiding her and helping her. But truly, who is she? You know, who is she as a human, as a person, as a soul, and making sure that we're never forgetting that.
Absolutely. And you can't always know. Sometimes their interests are so surprising. Mm-hmm. Jacob wanted to be an astronaut. Then he wanted to be a chef. Then he wanted to be a bartender. Today, he's a human rights lawyer. Those have no bearing. And yet we went all in on each one of those, except the bartending. it was without the alcohol, but he was really into mixing drinks. It was hilarious. But my point is, we actually looked at those careers. He went down and looked at Cincinnati State's state-of-the-art culinary school. He went to space camp. He had these passions that did not become his career. Johanna at one point thought she wanted to be a dolphin trainer. Today, she is a life coach living in Mexico surfing. So this is not, it's not a straight line. Just because your daughter tells you she has an interest right now doesn't mean that's what she will become later. It's how she teaches herself how to become what she wants to be later. If they're allowed to become something now, fantasize about it, really go all in, they'll know they can do that again and again. And that allows for that reinvention as maturity and more opportunity comes their way.
So I shared something with Sophie this morning because it reminds me of her, because she oftentimes will say, I don't know what I want to be. I don't know. And so I stumbled upon something that a friend had shared. She asked a little 5-year-old girl what she wanted to be when she grew up. And the girl paused for a minute and then she looked at her and said, I just want to be me. And this lady said, 5-year-olds get it. And so I shared that with Sophie because I just thought of Sophie immediately, and her face just lit up when I shared that with her. And she said, yeah, I just want to be me.
Perfect. Perfect. And to know that you have options for your whole life. Yeah. How many of us switch careers, get married and divorced, move to new locations because of a job? We can't nail down our futures, but what we can give our kids is the confidence to know that they can teach themselves whatever they need to live the life they want to live right now. So I think you're doing it. You sound like you're doing great.
Well, we're doing it.
Awesome. Maya, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Whew. It's a lot to take in when you think about raising kids and watching them become more and more their own person. I'm so grateful that Maya brought such an important conversation topic to our podcast. Thank you for joining me today. I want to make you aware that I'm quite active on Instagram. You can follow me there at Julie Brave Writer. We also have an active Twitter account. That account is simply at Brave Writer. Same for Facebook, facebook.com/Brave Writer. We look forward to hearing from you and taking your questions at our helpline, help@bravewriter.com, and our entire slate of spring classes for 2019 are registering now. We've already sold out 7 or 8 of them. We run them all spring. So no matter when you're listening to this, between January and June of 2019, I'm sure there's a class available for you. Check out bravewriter.com/online-classes for all the details. So great meeting with you today. I look forward to talking with you again next week as we explore more of these Ask Julie podcasts. I want to thank the podcast masters for doing an incredible job of putting this podcast together for us every single week. Thanks to Beth, Amy, and Jeanette, the Brave Writer team, getting this podcast to you each week. And a special thank you to Daniel Smythe for the incredible podcast photo shoot. We are loving those pictures this season. So let's get together again next week. Until then, continue the project of loving and learning in your families. My name is Julie Bogart, and this is Brave Writer.